You are listening to Upfront. I am Kat Brooks. We are continuing our coverage on HIV/AIDS in the Black community. This morning, I'm joined by Rob Newels. Minister Rob Newels?
Minister Rob,
who is the Executive Director of AIDS Project of the East Bay in Oakland, California, and Associate Pastor at Imani Church. The mission of AIDS Project of the East Bay is to prevent new HIV infections and to support individuals living with the virus through programs prioritizing some of the most vulnerable and marginalized individuals. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So it seems to me that like in every, at least once a month or every time I make it to an Oakland City Council meeting, there is an agenda item talking about declaring a crisis, an epidemic of HIV and AIDS in Oakland. What does that mean?
So, Alameda County declared a state of emergency because of the HIV epidemic among African Americans in the county 19 years ago. It's almost 20 years ago. And the epidemic, the crisis is that while HIV among everybody else is kind of at low levels, among Black people, it's disproportionate to our population in the county. And it's the same really around the country. Oakland looks more like the South than other urban areas. But while new HIV infections are going down in places like San Francisco and New York, they're not changing in Alameda County. And most of the HIV infection in our area is in Oakland, where the population is centered.
I'm glad you brought up the South, because that's where people sort of say is like where the epidemic is really out of control,
Particularly
for Black people. And so you're saying you can make parallels between what is happening in the South, like the whole South, and what's happening in the city of Oakland?
What's happening in the city of Oakland, what's happening in the rural South and the urban South, and what's happening in Southern Africa even. They're really comparable when you look at Black people. It's really Black people across the diaspora that are affected most by this disease.
Why?
There are structural issues that matter a lot. And I also think, medical mistrust is real in our communities. And while we talk about it, we don't address it.
What do you mean by medical mistrust?
The history of experimentation on Black bodies, from slavery through Tuskegee experiments, through, forced sterilization. I mean, there are all kinds of things. And to today, where people are treated differently because they are Black. I was doing a talk a week or two ago, and there's a recent study that interviewed medical students about their perceptions. There are lots of medical students that still think Black people have thicker blood than white people, or Black people's pain tolerance is higher than white people. And so that really affects how you're treated. And people can sense that stuff. I remember having a shoulder dislocated in the ROTC program in college, having surgery, going to the emergency room to get my stitches taken out, and the doctor assuming that I had been shot. And so those types of assumptions on the part of medical providers when they're treating their patients, it's not the same for every patient. And so people have medical mistrust. They don't trust the doctor. And then, quite often, as one of my colleagues at APEP says, we practice sick care rather than health care. We don't go to the doctor unless there's something really wrong with us.
Right. What other structural issues are impacting this? And specifically, I want to talk about this idea of shadow cities and shadow city funding.
Yeah. So resources are always a major issue when it comes to fighting any epidemic. When you're comparing Oakland to a city like San Francisco right across the bay, San Francisco, the city and county pitch in funds. They have greater donations, private funders. Oakland and Alameda County don't have that. Our health department doesn't even operate an STI clinic.
You're kidding me, because I just went down the street the other day. We're in our studios in Berkeley, and my daughter needed a vaccination. Don't write me about the vaccinations, y'all. But I walked in, there was hardly anybody in. They offer an STI clinic?
Yeah, Berkeley Health Department is separate from Alameda County or Contra Costa County. Berkeley has its own health department that does that stuff.
But
Alameda County doesn't operate a clinic. They partner with clinics, community clinics in the area, but they don't operate a clinic.
Okay.
The city of Oakland doesn't really provide any funding for the HIV epidemic. There used to be some funding under Ron Dellums and the Get Screened Oakland program with Dr. Marsha Martin. That kind of fizzled out. The energy around the program is still there. I don't think the support from the city has been there. And we are working with the county and with private folks right now. Oakland signed on to be a fast-track city with UNAIDS, which means we have some goals to meet as far as addressing this epidemic in our communities. And so there are folks in the community meeting right now trying to figure this thing out. But we would love more support from the city government particularly.
So essentially a shadow city is like a city that's, and correct me if I get this wrong, a city that is in dire need, facing an epidemic, et cetera, next to a larger city.
Yeah, so you see shadow cities outside Washington, D.C., and then there are all the suburbs where maybe more black people live. There's, you know, Dallas, but then there are all these suburbs. There's San Francisco, and then we're across from San Francisco. San Francisco has all kinds of funding. Oakland doesn't. And really, San Francisco has driven their epidemic down, so they have about the same number of new infections that we have in Alameda County, but they're much larger than us. And then the epidemic looks different as well. San Francisco has mostly white men that they're working with. And the epidemic in Oakland is really predominantly black men and women and transgender people of color.
So a budget just passed not too long ago. There was a big fight around a bunch of things. Where was this conversation about money to combat the HIV/AIDS epidemic in the black community in the budget dialogue?
In the state budget?
No, local, city budget.
So I'm out of those conversations, but I know that our directors in the county has been really good. And the county liaises really closely with the city, but you know, the city sends folks to meetings, and we'll see if they back it up with some action.
Within the black community, who right now are we seeing be the greatest risk?
Well, it's absolutely black men who have sex with men. And new infections are really around men in their 20s and 30s, maybe 30s and 40s, which means we're trying to reach the ones in their teens and 20s before they're infected. You know, there are more black people. There are more people in general living with HIV because treatment is better. So people aren't dying of AIDS like they were 20, 30 years ago. But so that increases the amount of older people living with HIV. But new infections definitely skew younger, and they're definitely highest among African-American men.
So there was all this information. I mean, I remember growing up in high school, right? Even then, there was like all this information coming in about, you know, having safe sex and getting tested. And are you seeing a generational gap in terms of who's acting on that information?
Well, so first, a lot of people are acting on old information. So getting tested, A, is important for everybody. There's stigma around getting tested. People don't want to get tested for any number of reasons. Sometimes they just don't want to know because they don't think that there's anything they can do about it. But there's a stigma around getting tested. As far as protecting yourself, condoms are great. That's what we preached for 30-something years, but condoms aren't the only thing, and I think that's where the generational shift is coming. Because we have new biomedical prevention methods now, we have, you know, a pill a day. I call it birth control for HIV. We can take a pill a day and protect yourself. Men, women,
PrEP.
Transgender folks. Yeah, PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis. But generationally, there are some folks that have been in the struggle for a long time who don't believe in PrEP at all. There are some folks who have medical mistrust who don't want to use PrEP. But in cities where they've implemented it, in San Francisco, in New York, in London, they've driven their new infections down drastically. But that's among white men. And so a big part of the prevention efforts in Alameda County have to do with educating black people about these options. Condoms are, you know, 60-70% effective in preventing HIV with anal sex. PrEP is like 90-99% effective in preventing HIV, period. And you know, there are new prevention methods coming out, but that's what we have right now. Those, in addition to treatment as prevention, or what folks are talking about is U equals U, undetectable equals untransmittable, where people like me living with HIV take medications to keep ourselves healthy. And as long as my viral load is undetectable, which it is, then I can't pass that virus to anybody else that I have sex with. It's just not happened.
You are listening to Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks. We are continuing our coverage on HIV and AIDS in the black community. I'm speaking to Rob Newells, Mr. Rob, Executive Director of AIDS Project of the East Bay. I want to go back to this idea of our young people for a minute. What are we not doing that we need to be doing to reach them? I mean, in this culture of hip hop and gangsters and all this other stuff, where are we missing the boat here? Because it seems to me, and this isn't my area of activism, but that 14 and 15 year olds, right, by now should not be getting HIV infections.
Should not. We're not talking about sex. We're not having open, honest conversations about sex with kids. There's a lot around that, right? We don't want teachers to talk about it in school because we want that to be something that the parents handle, but parents aren't handling it. And so where are those opportunities for kids to talk about it? And it's not Snapchat, or it's not they're finding stuff on YouTube. And so, you know, APEB tries to reach out into schools and community colleges and after-school programs. And, you know, I've got kids running around the agency almost every day now, which is, you know, a little annoying when I'm trying to work, but it's
right,
fun because you know, they're learning something. And it's not it's about not just young people, it's about treating the whole person. So it's not you come in and we're going to talk about sex all the time, but it's what else have you eaten today? Mm-hmm. You know, where are you staying? I mean, those are the other structural issues that affect HIV. Is there violence in your home? Mm-hmm. You know, intimate partner violence is a big risk factor for HIV infection. Mm-hmm. So there, we have to look at whole people when we're talking about the HIV epidemic. And that's why everybody can be involved in addressing it, because it's not like you have to be a provider of HIV services to make an impact on the epidemic.
How much does the way in which our black men in particular, black women increasingly, but specifically speaking about black men being funneled into the prison industrial complex and then coming home impact our share of carrying this virus in our community?
There's a lot of data that we need on that. You know, I was talking about that with some folks a week or two ago. We don't really know the folks, the status of folks once they're in that system. Like, we as providers aren't told when they're coming out how to, so that we can connect them to care. You know, they don't want to put condoms in the prisons because you're not supposed to have sex in the prisons. You know? I mean, there's just all these catch-22s. And so, you know, we try to work with folks that do reentry programs to make sure that we're catching folks as they come out to link them to care. And you know, I have guys from APEB that go to prisons to do health presentations just to kind of give folks information that we don't think they're getting by the healthcare providers in the prison system. But that's a big gap for us.
I read somewhere, too, that of women that are newly infected, the vast majority of those are black women and heteronormative black women. Mm-hmm. But if the greatest risk in the black community is black men who sleep with men, what am I missing?
So black and Latino women have been highly impacted. It's disproportionate as compared to white women. It's still way, way lower than black men.
Okay.
And so that's that, you know, black men are like up on 100 and black and Latino women are like at 15 and then everybody else is like at 10. Like, you know, okay. And really, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that Latino men are being highly impacted. Data that came out at the Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections earlier this year, CDC said that among ethnic groups, Latino men were the only ones that had an increase in HIV infections year over year. So, like, black men have kind of stayed the same. Everybody else has kind of gone down. Latino men have had an increase. And so we want to make sure that we're not paying too much, you know, paying all the attention to ourselves and letting them slip through the cracks.
Was there indication of why they've seen an increase?
I think just lack of attention, lack of resources, same thing. I mean, there's still, you know, it's still mostly African-American men in our area, but we don't want it. We don't want to trade places. We want to get everybody down on the same levels.
Right, right. You are also a minister.
I
am. As we've talked about a couple of times. There's been... So I'll tell a story. So I used to live in South Central Los Angeles, and there was a church on Crenshaw. I won't say which one, but there's a church on Crenshaw. And over that church, and this was about 10 years ago, there was a billboard, and it showed typical brothers from the hood, right? They looked like G's. But there was messaging on it about mm-hmm. HIV. The church had it taken down.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been, right, so it's just a story to highlight some of the conversations that there have been about the ways in which the black church has engaged around the HIV and AIDS epidemic in the black community. So I want to hear your thoughts about that. Was there things that the church could have, should have done early on?
I'm sure, you know, the church, again, church folks for sure don't like to talk about sex in public.
Right.
And I had an experience similar to that here locally with the church that allowed us to have a table for HIV information but didn't want us to have condoms available. But in the same building at the same event upstairs was a 15-year-old on a panel talking about how she had been living with her man for the last couple of years. But they didn't want us to have condoms because the teenagers weren't having sex. So the church has been kind of, as one of her professors, Horace Griffin, says, the perfecter of don't ask, don't tell. Because if you talk about sex, you have to talk about sexuality. And that's uncomfortable for a lot of Christians particularly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was on a call this morning with the Center for AIDS Research. And they've pulled together a bunch of faith leaders from around the country. We met in Rochester in March, and we're, you know, they put together the first national HIV/AIDS Awareness Day that they did in D.C. in August, and there'll be another one next August 26th that I hope to help coordinate a local action around that. The faith community is changing. I think 30 years ago, what we asked of them was to take care of people, to care for them on their sick beds. What the National HIV/AIDS Strategy asks of faith communities now is to put out accurate, up-to-date information about treatment, prevention, and testing, and to reduce and eliminate stigma. Those are the things that we need the faith community doing today.
How do you merge your worlds as an HIV/AIDS activist and a minister?
It's odd. I was called to this ministry. I mean, really, HIV/AIDS activism and advocacy is my ministry. I did not look for a job as executive director of AIDS Project of the East Bay. I had been kind of educating community members because I had opportunities to go to conferences and learn, and so it was my responsibility to come and share. I was invited to join the board of directors for APEB, and then they asked me to be the executive director, and it happened that I was in the middle of Revival talking about stepping out on faith, and so I quit my job to come and work with the agency. And it just it's been a natural fit. I think if I weren't called to it, it would be hard work.
Do you find because you are a minister that you can more easily talk to other black ministers in particular about this issue?
Well, you know, not really. Because I'm a gay black man, there's still some stigma around that in ministry. There are great folks. There are great heterosexual cisgender black men in ministry that will work with me, but there are those that will see me as a gay man first. Bishop Flunder, I think, has the same issues as a woman and as a lesbian woman with folks trying to shut you out or folks trying to not listen to you. Fortunately, I have some support in my pastor, Dr. George Cummings, who has cachet in the community and can get me into places and get me able to speak to folks. There are folks nationally that I get to speak with and work with. And Pernessa Seal from Balm and Gilead told me years ago when I started doing work with the faith community and HIV, don't worry about the folks who aren't ready to work with you. There are plenty of people who are. And so I work with the folks who are ready to kind of work. They may not be mega pastors, but they're ready to do some work. And if we can create a kind of a good number of those folks, then, you know, the rest of the folks will follow.
Because it just seems to me, and I'm sorry to keep beating this drum, but our people go to church.
Yeah.
Like, black people go to church. That's where we're at. So if we're going to do outreach and get to folks, and it seems like that is the platform.
It is. And, you know, when I first started working with faith community, I reached out to all the kind of community organizations to see, what are you guys doing with faith communities? And they didn't know what to do. And so I think that's kind of my role in bridging those two communities. We created the East Bay HIV Faith Collaborative a few years ago. Bridging community members, not necessarily faith leaders, although there are a couple of us, but just trying to do things around, you know, the National Week of Prayer for the Healing of AIDS, Transgender Awareness Day. We try to do things with faith communities, particularly around World AIDS Day, where we can provide bulletin inserts so that at least they have some conversation in their churches.
I want to go back to when we were talking about the most at-risk group, right, or men who sleep with men, but I specifically focus on the youth, particularly black youth, again, caught up in this culture, this hip-hop culture. What additional resources or pathways do we, safe spaces, do we need to create for young black men who sleep with men? I'm talking about high school, early teens.
Well, and I don't even think you can qualify it by saying young men who sleep with men, because quite often, particularly in the younger guys, the younger people in general are fluid, are more fluid than we have been.
Around sexuality,
around identity. And so I think just we need to work with our young people around sex, around healthy sexuality, around how to take charge of your own sex life. I mean, and some of that is just empowerment. We have kids that are beat down at home, not necessarily physically even, but just not built up. We'll say it that way. And so we need to build up our young people so that they take control of themselves and they're able to say yes or no to what they want to do and don't want to do. And they know what their options are as far as protecting themselves for sexual health.
What conversations are we not having that we need to be having around HIV and AIDS in the black community?
I think we need to not shame folks for not using condoms. You know, we don't shame folks when they get pregnant. So you shouldn't shame folks you shouldn't shame same gender loving men for not using condoms when we know that there are other ways to protect themselves. I think the condom versus PrEP issue has been big, and it's been a way to kind of separate folks. And I think really just accepting people who they as they are. We had a couple of transgender elected officials come into office last month, and so those types of things are important. You need to see people that look like you in positions of power and positions of influence. And I think that's what our young people need to see more of. So there needs to be more out, proud, kind of living with HIV and not living with HIV folks speaking their piece and letting young people see that so that they're not afraid to be themselves.
In the 80s and 90s, all of these organizations, white-led organizations, sprung into action, right, lobbied the medical industry, poured all this money into AIDS activism. Where they at?
Well, you know, those are the ones, that's a lot of what you hear when you hear folks talk about the epidemic is over. Because the epidemic is kind of ending in those communities. They've taken care of themselves. There are some funders that still work with Black communities. The issue that I think a lot of our organizations have had that I've talked about with executive directors from around the country is that funders, major funders, will give the money to a white organization, and then the white organization will subcontract with the smaller Black organization, and there's never, you're never getting your fair share of the pie. It's like they're using you for your community access. And so that's an issue that we've have to struggle with as far as funding goes, because the money is still there somewhere. It's just that it's not trickling down to the right places. And some of that has to do with capacity building. Some of these smaller Black-led organizations don't have a finance person on staff or can't afford a grant writer. So the white organizations have that. They can get the funding, but we can do the work. And so it's, we need to build up capacity for these smaller organizations so that they can be directly funded, because they know, we know where the money needs to go and how the money needs to be used in our communities.
Talk about the work at APEB. What do you guys do? What is out there for folks who are listening that may need to come see y'all?
So APEB, since 1983, so next year is our 35th anniversary.
Wow.
We provide an array of services. We just opened a second clinic. So we operate a licensed community health clinic, both in our downtown Oakland location on 14th and Webster, and at City of Refuge Church, where Bishop Flunder serves in East Oakland. So we have clinics in both places. We do HIV and Hep C testing, both in the office and on our mobile testing unit. We have medical case management, psychosocial support services and groups. I do some pastoral care. We have a food pantry that folks can come and get food every couple of weeks if they want. We have youth programs. Like I said, our youth are running around the office learning how to do resumes and get jobs. We work with transgender people of color. We have some funding to do that. So we have substance use treatment programs. We're looking at implementing tobacco cessation programs, violence reduction programs. Again, we try to treat the whole person. We pride ourselves in being a one-stop shop. If we get folks in the door one time, we don't want to make them go someplace else to get another service. If we can get them and give them everything they need, that's our goal.
I interviewed a woman as part of this series, Vanita Ray.
Mm-hmm.
You're smiling.
Yeah.
She's lovely.
Yes.
Like I just teared up just thinking about her. I cried, not like out of pain, but just inspiration through our whole interview. Anyway, she's on her way back to Texas, and her goal now is zero infections, zero, end of the virus, end of the epidemic. Is that possible?
We can get to no new infections, I think. So when I think about my friend Moses Ndagara from Uganda, he's like, you cannot end AIDS if there's two people living with AIDS. And so until there's a cure, then you don't really end AIDS. But, the quote is, we have the tools we need right now. So we have condoms, we have PrEP, we have treatment as prevention. What we don't have is a way to get everybody involved in one or more of those options.
Mm-hmm.
So it's out there, it's possible. I think the United Nations UNAIDS goals of getting 90% of folks tested and 90% of folks on meds and 90% of those folks undetectable is a good goal. I mean, perfect is hard. So, we don't want to miss the mark by striving for perfect. But I think if we can get folks the information they need to make healthy decisions for themselves, the epidemic will take care of itself.
Has there been any impact of the Trump administration on resources to deal with HIV and AIDS?
Not yet, because they haven't been able to do what they wanted to do. But it's something that's definitely on everybody's radar. We're looking at healthcare. We're looking at this tax deal that's being floated right now.
In what ways will that impact this work?
So there are, HRSA right now operates a pharmacy program that benefits organizations that take care of community. And, the administration is looking at cutting some of that funding. There's funding cuts being looked at around the Department of Health and Human Services, and that has to do with, a lot of the research that goes on for new prevention methods. So maybe people that don't want to take a pill every day can use a douche or can use a lube that's going to protect them. But we need to finish that kind of research. And so that funding is at risk. Just if tax stuff doesn't work out for larger corporations, they'll give less, right? So those are the challenges that we all face.
And then the trickle-down effect of that will be?
Less services to folks that need them the most.
Black and brown people.
Absolutely. I mean, folks who have private insurance don't really worry about these things. Most of our communities, most of the folks we serve don't have private insurance. They're on Medi-Cal. And if California has to make up for anything that the federal government takes away, that's a problem.
Your website, right quick.
www.apeb.org.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks. We have been speaking with Rob Newels, Minister Rob, as part of our continuing coverage this month of HIV and AIDS in the Black community. Minister Rob is the Executive Director of AIDS Project of the East Bay in Oakland. Their mission is to prevent new HIV infections and to support individuals living with the virus through programs prioritizing some of the most vulnerable and marginalized individuals.